from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After 4 days of lavish parties, fiery speeches, and white-hot attacks on the Democrats, the Republican National Convention wrapped up last night with George Bush's acceptance speech and a rapturous response from the party faithful in New York. Striking many of the same themes he struck 4 years ago, the president spoke of compassionate conservatism, of the dangers of government spending, about tax reform and his vision of an ownership society. And of course, there was lots of tough talk about Iraq and the war on terror. President Bush is hoping to ride his convention message straight through to November. He started with a campaign stop in Moosic, Pennsylvania, just after midnight.
I enjoyed giving that speech last night. And I am so proud that your state made my nomination official.
But John Kerry was on the stump, too, plunging in with a two-fisted midnight rally in Newark, Ohio.
I think misleading your nation into war makes you unfit to lead this nation. I think that doing nothing when millions of Americans are losing their jobs over 4 years and doing nothing makes you unfit to lead this nation.
With just 2 months to Election Day and the presidential debates around the corner, the battle is now truly on, and it remains all about the states that are still up for grabs. Tonight on Point, how the GOP convention played across the country and, most of all, how it played in the battleground states that will decide this election. We go first to Princeton, New Jersey, where Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup poll, has been monitoring the standings of Kerry and Bush. I asked Frank Newport what the polls showed going into this week's convention.
Too close to call. Any way you look at it, if you just look at swing state voting, which we have at Gallup, or if you look at the national popular vote among likely voters, our latest Gallup poll, and in fact most polls, showed Bush may have had a slight edge, but within the margin of error. So I think it is best to say that going into the convention, the race was essentially dead even.
And take us into those numbers. First for George Bush, then. Where were his strengths going into the convention? Where were his weaknesses? What did he need to accomplish from a pollster's point of view with the convention this week?
Well, it was an interesting strategic decision. It's kind of like warfare. Do you go at your opponent's strength, or do you skirt around the strength and go after his weaknesses? Bush has obvious strengths in terms of being considered a strong and decisive leader and in terms of being better equipped to handle terrorism than John Kerry. Those are the signature things that come out of our polling and have for a number of months. Mm-hmm. One could argue that since those are well established, Bush should come at his weaknesses on a relative basis, which are almost anything domestic. Kerry does better. The Democrat does better on those. But as we saw at the convention, he certainly started out reinforcing his already existing strengths by all the high number of mentions of 9/11 and terrorism and what have you. So apparently they made that decision. Now, in his speech last night, Bush did address a litany of domestic proposals, so he was trying to come back and remedy that, but it's unclear whether or not he's achieved parity with Kerry on those just based on one speech.
When do you think it will become clear whether or not George Bush has found himself a bounce in that New York convention?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We will have polling, of course, that'll tell us where the race stands now, but I just reviewed a lot of our historic Gallup polling, and a lot of that changes during the course of the last 2 months. So we really won't know who's done the best job of winning the election until our last poll right before the election. Now, back in 1980, Reagan surged in the last 3 days and won by 10 points when Carter had been virtually even before that. So we've learned in history that a lot can change in these last 2 months.
So you're saying, of course, people are going to be focused over these next few days about whether or not George Bush gets a bounce. John Kerry didn't really get much of a bounce out of the Democratic convention. His party said they didn't expect one. But you're saying that even if George Bush does get a bounce, this is not so meaningful now?
Well, everything is meaningful because it tells us where the electorate stands at this point, and that is meaningful. And if George Bush is in our Gallup polling way ahead of Kerry or vice versa, certainly you would begin to say the probabilities are high he'll be able to sustain that and win. But everything else being equal, looking at the data, we do know things can change, and they should. After all, they're going to be spending tens of millions of dollars over the next 2 months to change voters' minds.
Well, and debating and all the rest, right?
Right. So, you know, it would be unusual if nobody did change their mind over these last 2 months. So I fully expect that the potential is there for the race to move around. Gore in 2000 was ahead at this point, right after Labor Day, after the Democratic convention. And even if you grant that he won the popular vote, it was basically a statistical tie when it was all over.
Is there historically a size of gap that can open up that's just not bridgeable, that one candidate pulling ahead by a degree that the other in these last 2 months can't close?
Yes, when you look at it, the races that incumbents went on and kind of breezed to reelection, they had pretty good lead, 6 points or higher in our Gallup polling after Labor Day. So I would say if Bush is ahead by, 6, 7, 8, 9 points after Labor Day, it would look certainly better. But as kind of a hedgy scientist as I am, I would say still that doesn't mean it's absolute, that certainly Kerry could come back. But it's common sense. The bigger the lead a candidate has in Labor Day, the harder it is for the opponent to catch up. It's like football. In the first quarter, if you're ahead by 40 to nothing, it's going to be harder for your opponent in the next 3 quarters to catch up. And that's true in politics.
And let's take John Kerry on for just a second here. What do the polls say about his strengths and weaknesses now?
Well, Kerry's strengths are the traditional Democratic strengths, and that is anything domestic. Kerry beats Bush when we ask who does a better job handling Medicare, health care, even the economy, up at least until our poll before the convention, prescription drugs, things like that. That's where Kerry does better than does Bush.
Can you tell if the attacks on John Kerry's Vietnam record have hurt him?
A matter of some controversy. There have been some people who look at polling who say, yes, it seemed to have hurt him. And our Gallup polling suggests that they may not have hurt the ballot directly, because we really saw Bush doing somewhat better almost immediately after the Democratic convention, interestingly, and that it didn't change so much in the last several weeks when those swift votes were getting all the attention. But Kerry did well on some internal dimensions, as we call them, after the convention, and those deteriorated over the next several weeks. Didn't do quite as well vis-a-vis Bush on some dimensions. So it may be a combination of just the straightforward passage of time and perhaps the swift vote ads did hurt Kerry a little.
And Frank, just on the main issue that the Republicans hammered home in New York, the war on terror and strength of leadership, do you have the numbers in front of you that would show us your most recent numbers about how these two candidates compare?
Yeah, I don't have the precise ones, but I do know that it's like 20-point gap when you say who fits this better, strong and decisive leader. And that, in fact, Bush over Kerry by a 20-point margin, and we've asked that a number of times. And that's the highest gap that Bush has had on that any time we've asked it. So, in other words, Bush is better positioned even before the convention on that dimension than he has been any other time. And that's what they know. The Bush people are aware of the data. That's why they've been hammering it home. And, of course, the Kerry people know that, and that's why they made the decision, right or wrong, history will tell us, in their convention to really try to hammer home Kerry's military experience to prove that he, too, could be a strong leader.
Frank Newport, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll. He spoke with me today from Princeton, New Jersey. We are talking tonight about reaction across the country to the GOP convention, especially in the critical swing states. Are you in a battleground state? Did the GOP move your needle this week or not? Why? Why not? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I should say we will hear later in this hour also some analysis of the terrible, bloody bloodbath in Belson, Russia today, where that school full of children and people had been taken hostage and all erupted late in the day. Tremendous death toll coming out of there and injuries as well. But first to politics. And joining me right now from Arlington, Virginia, is Chuck Todd, editor-in-chief of The Hotline, a daily briefing newsletter based in Washington. Chuck Todd, thanks for being with us tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And from Iowa City, Iowa, Rob Bignell, opinion editor for the Iowa City Press Citizen. Rob, great to have you back.
Thank you.
Rob, you were with us right after the Democratic convention in Boston. We talked the next night, just like we're doing now, after the Republican convention. We got your response then to the show that the Dems put on. How about the GOP this week? How's it gone down in Iowa City?
I think the Republicans accomplished what the Democrats accomplished about a month ago. They sort of solidified their base, those who are strong supporters of them, and they didn't really move the undecideds. There may have been a few undecideds who've switched over, but statistically, it's still pretty much a dead heat here.
And, Rob, when you talk to folks around town in Iowa City, is there a way to describe the response? The feeling at these two conventions was different. The messaging was different. There was a lot of red meat criticism, as they say, and a lot of war talk at the Republican convention. Can you tell if that's fired the Republican base up deeply, which we hear now is Karl Rove's strategy to dig in deep and bring more of those people out? Or is it seen as, grandstanding in New York?
Yeah, I think among Republicans, they really fired them up. In fact, we even got some letters to the editor this week from Republicans watching the convention, and many of them just simply echo what was being said during the convention. To give you one example,
yeah.
Todd Jansen from Iowa City just wrote last night, as a matter of fact, that Kerry claims he will strengthen our intelligence and military. Yet his voting record has done more damage to our military and intelligence than what Al-Qaeda ever could dream of. And
that's right in the Zell Miller vein there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think a few of the undecideds would agree with that. I think the Republicans did convince them, just as a month ago Kerry convinced a few undecideds that he really could lead the nation when it came to terrorism and foreign policy issues.
Chuck Todd, join us here. Since I talked with Frank Newport at Gallup, we've got poll numbers coming out. Now, these are not from the very end of the Republican convention, but from polling done during that convention. And Time magazine is now reporting that for the first time in this race, a real lead has opened up, and it's a lead for President Bush, an 11-point lead, they're reporting. Zogby is also reporting a lead now, but quite a lot smaller, just 3 points, probably within the margin of error. We don't have a confirmed kind of poll picture of a bounce or no bounce, but this early time report says, hey, the president may have really gained something here.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and pick apart the time poll, but I'll say this, that the company that's doing the time poll has very little track record in presidential politics as far as public polling is concerned. I mean, this is a new pollster that Time is using this year. And the other thing I would point out with that poll is they ask Ralph Nader. And you can't ask Ralph Nader nationally in your sampling because, for instance, he's not on the California ballot. And when you do a sample of likely voters, Californians make up nearly, I think, something like 15% of a national ballot.
But does it really matter with the numbers they're showing? They're
well,
now showing among likely voters.
That's a big chunk.
Yeah.
That's a big chunk of voters, number one. So I wouldn't get too carried away by the time poll, to be honest. But
fair enough. It's very early, and we're glad for that.
Perception-wise, that's a big deal because Time magazine is so credible of a news source. So that's going to give it a lot of legs over the weekend. And you know what? That stuff's sometimes more important than what the actual polls say because the perception can make – you know, there are bandwagon voters out there. Some
of
these swing voters can be bandwagon voters, and they want to be with the winner. They don't want to be with the loser. And that can have a snowball effect. So it's a big thing to have happen for the weekend for the president.
Rob Bignell in Iowa, is there a bandwagon effect that you can imagine brewing out there? The Republicans' convention is closer to the vote. It's getting into the heart of the campaign season now, where people may feel it is time to decide. Is just the showmanship of this and the bandwagon effect something to take into account there?
Yeah, I think there's bandwagon effect in states that lean strong toward Bush or that are leaning strong toward Kerry. And you can see that if you look at the various polls that were brought out from Zogby to Rasmussen Reports to a Survey USA during the past week or so. You know, Bush is gaining in places like Georgia, Alabama, Texas, but Kerry was never going to win there anyway. And Kerry, likewise, has gained in some of those states that he has strong support in as well. But in a swing state like Iowa, Kerry went up a couple of points right after the Democratic convention. He seems to be down now a couple of points in the latest poll that came out this morning, which still has a 5% margin of error. So you really can't go too closely by that poll.
Now, the vice president, I should say, John Kerry, last night seemed to be sort of unleashing harsher criticism than he has. He had a midnight rally calling President Bush unfit to serve as president, accusing the president and vice president of ducking real military service in Vietnam, a much, much tougher tone. Do you think he can ride that successfully with the Iowa voters, Rob Bignell? Do they want to see him fight tough, too?
I think the Democrats want to see him fight tough, and the Democrats don't want to lose hope in him. I think Kerry and a lot of the Democrats here who are already supporting him believe that he can't make the mistake that Mike Dukakis did back in '88, which has not come out fighting. But I think among undecideds, I don't think that strategy is going to sway too many people, either for Kerry or against him.
Rob Bignell, Chuck Todd, please stand by. We're talking tonight about how the GOP convention played across the country and in particular in the battleground states, the states that are still up for grabs. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about how the GOP convention played across the country and especially in the battleground states, those states that are still up for grab, the ones that will decide the election. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you swinging toward the red meat, large and in charge Republican view of the world or against it? And two conventions down, are you with strong and simple George Bush or brave and nuanced John Kerry? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And if you're in one of those battleground states, we'd particularly like to hear from you. We're joined tonight from Arlington, Virginia, by Chuck Todd, editor-in-chief of the National Journal's Hotline, and from Iowa City, Rob Bignell, opinion editor for the Iowa City Press-Citizen. And right now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I hear the dogs are barking at the moon already, Harry Moskos, columnist and letters editor for the Albuquerque Journal. Harry, thanks for being with us again.
Sure, Tom.
Harry, we talked to you after the Democratic convention. You gave us some sense of Albuquerque response then. It's only a day since the Republicans packed up their New York shop. What are you hearing?
Three themes, but there's no letter saying that I'm an independent and one of the conventions changed my mind. The pro-Bush people are still as vocal. The pro-Kerry people are responding. And then we're getting the third group of theme is we're sick of the whole thing. We're tired of the accusations, distortions, and neither candidate's offering solutions. So you're getting that view. But I don't think the convention here has changed anybody's leanings of what they had prior to the convention. Some of the letters have been critical about the coverage, but we did one thing here. What we did on page one for the Democrats, we did identical for the Republicans, but people still took issue with the coverage.
And I'm curious about that, Harry. What was the complaint about the Albuquerque Journal's coverage?
Liberal or were conservative, depending what view one person complained about.
You played it too big, not big enough.
Right, and then we pointed out the front pages were identical, the same number of pictures, the same size pictures, because we knew that criticism would be coming. But New Mexico is still considered a toss-up state. In fact, the vice president's coming out again next week. Both parties have been making frequent visits to New Mexico, and we know with five electoral votes, which normally is not considered much impact, they are really both concerned about New Mexico.
You know, it's interesting. I bet a lot of newspapers were weighing their coverage very carefully this week to make sure that it was almost line for line, similar Republican and Democratic. Harry Moskos, on that third theme you described, the people saying they're fed up, were they responding in particular to any aspects of the GOP convention or just generally to the race with 60 days to go, 59 days?
It started with both. It actually started with the Swift Bolt incident when that theme started showing up where some people would take issue with that campaign. But right now they're saying that we're tired of hearing these accusations back and forth. We want to hear solutions to the real issues facing America, health care, education, the jobless, the census figure reporting increased poverty statistics.
Right.
He said the candidates aren't discussing these things and how they will work to solve these problems, and we're just hearing this general terms about he's bad, I'm good.
Right. So lines pretty deeply drawn in New Mexico, and those questions right there in the middle. Harry Moskos, columnist and letters editor for the Albuquerque Journal. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Let's turn to our callers. Ray is calling from Fremont, New Hampshire. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening. I really enjoy your program.
Thanks
for letting me on.
Sure. Good to have you.
I just wanted to quickly, I guess, throw a question out there with a brief comment.
Yeah.
I'm a registered Republican from New Hampshire.
Okay.
After seeing the convention, I am going to vote Kerry, and that is simply because of two things. First off is the venomous speech given by Zell Miller, number one, and number two, the entire Purple Heart Band-Aid cutesy little trick many bought into at the convention. There were some great letters, be it over the internet, CNN, MSNBC.com, et cetera.
Ray, let me ask you. You say you're a registered Republican, but a little bit of brutal rhetoric and some Band-Aids with a Purple Heart, and you're ready to turn just like that to John Kerry?
I am, because I think it speaks to leadership and standing up and demonstrating that you're above the fray. And like your last caller or the last individual you had on, neither's presenting solutions. And when that happens, I look toward someone with dignity and leadership, and I found more of that with Kerry than I did with Bush in the Republican convention.
Ray, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call. Chuck Todd, there's a Republican who says he's turning the other way. I'm wondering if there's going to be much of that. The Republicans, certainly in New York, seemed to be not able to get enough of that very high-steam rhetoric there.
You know, it's interesting that Republican, the Bush campaign, gave their convention what it wanted, while Kerry did not give its convention what it wanted. I remember in the Democratic convention watching the almost elation from the delegates when Al Sharpton went off script and threw out some red meat to them. They were just glad to hear something, and this convention was certainly a lot more red meat for the Republican base and got them well. You know, the thing is that I keep hearing is, and I heard this from a lot of Republicans on Thursday when I was up there in New York, is the fear of the Zell Miller speech. And if that is going to turn people off, you know, this caller cited it. And there's this fear among a lot of Republicans that the Zell Miller speech may end up being the thing that people remember most about this convention.
Rob Bignell, let me ask you about that. It could be. In Iowa, have you heard people saying, holy smokes, that was terrific, or holy smokes, that was too much, and at some point just too dark and angry?
No, we've actually got letters reflecting just what your caller from New Hampshire had said. In fact, I can read a little bit of one to you.
Let's hear it, yeah.
One from a Floyd T. Blakely, who's here from Iowa City. He's been voting in every election since 44, and he wrote that, I plan to vote according to the record of the past 4 years. We are in a war that was based on manipulated truths. Goes on to say, I've seen more people out of work than since the Great Depression of the 1930s. And we have the cost of health care increasing greatly and prescription drug benefit program enacted that favors the big drug companies. He was, you know, really turned off, I think, by a lot of the rhetoric. Another letter writer wrote specifically that because of the Band-Aid incident, they felt insulted. I haven't published his letter yet, but he said he had a son who served in the National Guard and was actually offended by that. But some people would put that Band-Aid on and mock any kind of a soldier or troop, regardless of what their record was in war.
Well, I guess it was pretty strong seasoning in New York. And if you like that flavor, you would love it. But if you didn't, it would be a lot to take. I want to turn now to two undecided voters in Ohio, critical state for both campaigns, two guys who we talked to after the Democratic convention. Daniel Goddard joins us from Cincinnati. Daniel, hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Dana Mark Bales in Dayton, Ohio. Dana, thank you for coming back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being on.
Dana, first to you. After we heard the Democrats have their big convention, you said you were impressed with a lot of what you heard from John Kerry. He looked very sincere. That you weren't persuaded yet one way or the other. You still saw George Bush as a people person. Now you've seen George Bush and his crew for a week in New York. How are you feeling tonight?
Well, I'll tell you, I think for people who feel that the issue is security, I think that Bush did an excellent job of coming across, again, empathetic with people and understanding the pain that we felt after 9/11 and working hard to try to see that it doesn't happen again. I think that's what he was attempting to do, and he was very successful. But I noticed he didn't talk much about jobs. I don't think he even mentioned outsourcing overseas. He didn't talk a whole lot about health care or the deficit. In other words, on domestic issues, he was mostly silent. He spent most of his time wrapping himself in the flag.
And Daniel Goddard, you watched the Republican convention and saw the coverage of it anyway. How did it strike you?
Well, on Bush's speech in particular, which is what I kind of focused on, I thought, you know, it was an outstanding speech. And, you know, I think he probably came across really well. But in the end, it's just words. And what we haven't seen is a lot of actions, like Dana said, especially on the domestic side of things. He's clearly, you know, standing on his national security foot and trying to get, I think, reelected based on, you know, what he's done to bring the country out of the 9/11 incident.
Okay, so here we are. You two are prime examples of the kind of voter that both of these campaigns desperately want to grab. Daniel Goddard, let me put it to you. After the Democratic convention, you said you were favorably impressed with John Kerry. You said you thought he had the credentials to step in and be commander-in-chief. Now you've heard President Bush's speech and heard the atmosphere coming out of New York. Where's your vote leaning tonight, Daniel?
To be honest, it's probably leaning back towards Bush a little bit. After the Democratic convention, I did like what I saw out of Kerry. But for some reason, I'm just not convinced that he'll be the leader that we need. And you know, I, except for the question of domestic issues, I think, you know, Bush is, you know, will be another good president for another 4 years.
Sounds like you're leaning pretty hard that way. Do you think the Republicans, all their jibes at Senator Kerry, succeeded in turning you around? The critique of his Vietnam War record, heavy pummeling he took in New York, is that what's changed your mind, or is it John Kerry's own performance?
No, the pummeling that Kerry took hurt Bush's cause, for me anyway. I thought that was just poor taste, and if anything, that turned me away from Bush. But I guess I'm trying to ignore that, you know, pass it off as election year, you know, politicking, and hopefully think better of him. Of Bush, that is, you know, when he's actually president.
So there's one pretty hard lean for George Bush in Ohio. Dana Mark Bales, where do you stand?
Well, you know, it's funny that Daniel and I listened to the same thing, and we tend to think a lot alike, and yet almost headed to the other direction. Right now, if I were voting today, it would be for Kerry, but it would be strictly on domestic issues. And I think for me, the domestic issues are more important. I understand that if someone else had security issues as being more important, that they would lean to Bush.
And so you find yourself leaning tonight?
Towards Kerry.
Towards Kerry, there it is. It's a split decision from our vast panel of two in Ohio, but it's great to have you both reflecting how it's been received out there. Dana Mark Bales in Dayton, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Well, thank you.
And Daniel Goddard in Cincinnati, thanks for being with us tonight. Hope we can talk to both of you before the election.
Okay, thanks a lot.
So here we are, looking at how this GOP convention has played across the country. It was white hot. It was riled up. It was rocking in the aisles with anger at the Democrats. A lot of criticism of John Kerry and a lot of talk about war and security and the strength of George Bush. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's get another call. Alex is calling from Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Just have a few quick comments. My impression of after watching both conventions very closely, with the Democratic convention, I thought it was very well handled, but it appeared to me that the Democrats were trying very hard to be like Republicans, while with the Republican convention, they were very comfortable in being Republicans, and they did a very good job of that. Another thing is that the impression from the entire campaign from both parties, especially the Democrats, is that they haven't been aggressive towards George Bush, and whether you want to call it pummeling and attacks, it's you have to be aggressive in a campaign. And the impression that I'm walking away with is if they cannot be aggressive in a political campaign, will they have the wherewithal to be aggressive toward in engaging our enemies and engaging our allies and not being so concerned about let's make friends and let's be nice.
And is that the personal feeling that you're coming away with, that concern, Alex, or you're perceiving that in your community?
That's a personal feeling, because in my community, I'm from Wisconsin, and and I think the political situation in this country right now is so poisonous that I hesitate to bring up politics, although I love talking about it, especially in the workplace.
Right. So we've got to talk about it on the radio because you may find eggs on your car.
Exactly. Or worse yet, you know, and I don't know where my boss stands, and hopefully he's not listening to me right now.
Right.
But, the other thing is there's very little coverage of the demonstrators, particularly inside the convention hall.
The woman who got close to Dick Cheney, the pink slip lady last night and the gang earlier, yeah?
Yeah, and the night before, there was a melee where a Wisconsin delegate apparently was punched and cut in the head by a demonstrator, and people are continually talking about Miller, but really negate that. And this is a constituency of the people that we're voting for Kerry. These are very mean, aggressive people. I have faced them in many cases. And then lastly, the job report came out today with 144,000 new jobs.
Yeah.
The previous 2 months were also revised upwards. Just wanted to know from Chuck how he believes that that's going to play out.
Okay, let us pick those up, Alex, and thank you very much for your call. Chuck Todd, there's a lot there. Let's just deal with the protesters first. I have to say, I heard a lot of Republicans describe them as mean, vicious, and so on. I was in the streets of New York a lot this week, and I saw a lot of protesting. It was overall incredibly peaceful. I saw lots of street debates, relatively civil, between protesters and delegates.
Yeah, I did not think. I thought the protesters were very well behaved. You know, there were a couple of exceptions, but guess what? I haven't been to a political convention. I've been to six of these, and I haven't been to one yet where there weren't a couple of crazy people. That always attracts a few crazy people.
Yeah.
But all in all, I thought it was very well behaved. And in fact, I'm surprised that more hasn't been made of the fact that every single night of the convention, some protester got on the floor. Let me tell you, those floor passes were hard to get. I couldn't get on the floor.
And the rings of security were deep. It is incredible.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you the irony. Here's a party that was arguing that they were, you know, the best to keep the country safe, and they couldn't keep the floor of their convention safe.
But what about the substantive complaints here? We're hearing Alex saying the Democrats made a mistake in being too Republican, and that they had the gloves tied on too tightly. They should have been gloves off in Boston.
It is so true. This is an awkward lesson that has been learned too well by the Democratic establishment from Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton succeeded in doing this back in 1992. And then 96, he sort of figured out how to fuzz up the issues a little bit, and grab the middle. That isn't where this electorate is this time, and I think that the Democrats have not talked enough about Bush's record. I mean, you saw there wasn't a speaker that did not talk about John Kerry's record. In fact, I'm confused after watching these conventions, if I were just a casual observer, on who's the incumbent and who's the challenger. George Bush and his party acted like the challenger, acted like the party that was behind by 4 or 5 points and was really trying to win this thing. John Kerry looked like the incumbent trying to protect the lead. And I think the convention is turning out, the Democratic convention is turning out definitely to be a missed opportunity.
Interesting tonight, as Bill Clinton, of course, is in the hospital, had chest pain scheduled for quadruple bypass heart surgery, I believe. And, Chuck Todd, I understand he was about to go out on the campaign trail for John Kerry in a way that, of course, he did not for Al Gore, at Al Gore's disinvitation.
No, and I think he'll actually, when he ends up going, I mean, assuming he does, you know, bypass surgeries are very successful now, one would assume he would get on the trail, just not as hectic of a schedule, and one might imagine that he might actually become a more compelling figure to watch on the trail.
Well, maybe, but it's not easy to stand up off that surgery table and go straight out. Chuck Todd, stand by. Rob Bignell in Iowa City. We're talking tonight about how the GOP convention played across the country, and in particular in the battleground states. Are you in one of them? Did the GOP move your needle this week? And who's got the heartbeat of America, the GOP or the Democrats? We're 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking tonight at how the GOP convention is playing across the country. Time magazine saying that President Bush has opened up an 11-point lead. A lot of skepticism about that early polling right now. There will be a lot of polling over this weekend. I say hold on to your hat. We'll see what comes out next week. But clearly a loud noise made in New York this week. Before we go on with that, I want to turn quickly to New York, where we're joined by Sindri Rodriguez, and a reporter for WNYC. We want to check in on the situation of Bill Clinton's health. Sindri, what can you tell us?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm outside Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, where the former president was admitted today. I can tell you that yesterday he went to a hospital in northern Westchester complaining of shortness of breath and mild chest pains. They sent him home. They cleared him. This morning he went to another hospital in Westchester where an angioplasty where tests showed that he had some blockages. So he is scheduled to have bypass surgery early next week. Senator Clinton came out moments ago and addressed the press who's been at the hospital surrounding it for hours, all afternoon actually. She said that the president was in good spirits. The former president was in good spirits. She thanked everyone for their concern. She said that he was beating all of them at cards and all the other games that they were playing. She said there wouldn't be any information until after his surgery early next week. She told the press to have a good weekend. She said this is not exactly how they were planning to spend their weekend. She was actually in upstate New York on a campaign tour, and he was supposed to be meeting her there, but obviously that didn't work out, and now herself and her daughter Chelsea are here in New York City.
So serious surgery scheduled for the president early next week, but routine surgery, it's important to say.
Yes, and she also said that he would be back in fighting form, that's a quote, very soon. So he's 58 years old, and some have described this as pretty typical surgery for someone of his age.
Cindy Rodriguez, thanks so much for joining us from New York.
Thank you.
Cindy Rodriguez, a reporter for WNYC, checking in on Bill Clinton, 58 years old, some blockage that's going to require open-heart surgery next week, quadruple bypass, as we understand at this moment. We'll hear more about that next week. We're talking tonight about how the GOP convention has played across the country. Let's touch out to one more state right now. Michael Mayo is joining us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He's a Metro columnist there for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. Michael, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good evening, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. We talked about the Democratic convention as soon as it wrapped up. Now the GOP is packing up its tent in New York and heading out across the country. How has it played in the Fort Lauderdale area?
Well, in Fort Lauderdale, it's been, partially preempted by Hurricane Frances.
Oh.
And it's funny, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the disparity, if there was going to be a disparity in coverage between the two different conventions. Well, at least down here in this major metro market, the Miami-Fort Lauderdale stations last night all preempted the convention coverage with the hurricane coverage because we were in mandatory evacuation. We had this big Category 4 storm hovering off the coast, and it's still hovering, and now it's down to a Category 3. And actually, the weather here is kind of pleasant. It's breezy, but I could actually see a nice sunset here because the storm has just kind of stalled on the northern Bahamas.
It sounds like the weather has completely swamped politics in Florida these couple
days. Yeah, especially between Hurricane Charlie 3 weeks ago, which obviously cut a wide and long swath of devastation through the western and central parts of the state, and now we're bracing for another storm.
Here comes number two. And, Michael, when the storm's clear, how do you think that very tough message in New York is likely to play there?
Well, I did get a chance to see the speech last night of President Bush, and, I think it's a toss-up state. Here the polling in Florida has gone from Kerry slightly ahead to now Bush slightly ahead. I think there's a long way between now and November 2nd. And it depends on, you know, a number of factors, what the economy does, what's going on in the war of terror, whether, you know, there's any, advances made in either, getting their hands on Osama bin Laden or if any preventing any future attacks.
So a lot still to
I'd
talk about.
I'd say it's very
then.
Much a toss-up, but we do have Ralph Nader on the ballot here again. He did qualify. And so now I think, you know, for people who are kind of disenchanted with the Kerry campaign and the direction or lack of direction that he's taken, there might be people who go in the way of Ralph Nader again to register a protest.
Michael Mayo, batten down your hatches and stay safe there. Thanks for joining us from Florida tonight. Chuck Todd, so here we are. The candidates are going to be out there going gangbusters now. It would appear that John Kerry is rolling up his sleeves and may be tougher in his rhetoric and his attacks on George Bush. The debates are coming up. We've seen the conventions head-to-head. What do you anticipate in the debate performance?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. First of all, don't forget we're going to have the debate about the debates because, you know, we don't have agreement yet on how many debates there are going to be. There is a debate commission that says they want three debates and one vice presidential. But I talked to a lot of Bushies this week, and now that they have the lead, and now that they feel, I'll tell you, they are very confident. They think they're going to win this thing. They feel confident they're going to win this thing. It's not a cautious confidence; it's a cocky confidence at
wow.
this point.
Wow!
And they're only going to have two debates.
And they just won't participate in a third, you're
saying?
They're
not going to do a third debate. You know, Bill Clinton only did two. The debate commission asked for three, and they only did two with Bob Dole, and that will be the precedence that the Bush campaign uses to get to, and that's all they're going
to
have.
To refuse the third.
Kerry just has to understand that. He's the challenger. He's not the incumbent. That's the power of incumbency.
And do we have dates for those yet and locations?
We've got it. Well, we have three locations. We have Miami, we have Phoenix, we have St. Louis for the presidentials, and then we have Cleveland for the vice presidential. But who knows which one gets dropped. My guess is they're not going to drop Miami. I would be a little worried if I had a debate in Phoenix right now, because I think of those three locations, Phoenix might be the one that that gets dropped there, because Anheuser-Busch, whose headquarters is in St. Louis, is one of the biggest debate sponsors. So,
and is there a date for the first debate at this point?
I believe it's September 30th. Boy, I hope I have that right. I don't have it in front of me.
Anyway, late September.
Yeah, it's very early. You will have the debates a little bit earlier, because don't forget, we have a lot of states that vote early now, that start mm-hmm. early voting, and voting will start
absentee voting
in the second week of October, first and second week of October. So, to be honest, debates need to be a little bit earlier now. And I think they will be a big moment, but, you know, there will be an unanticipated moment that will be a big moment. And I think, for instance, one that I think we know that's going to happen, unfortunately, is the death of the 1,000th U.S. soldier in Iraq. It's probably going to happen in the next 4 to 6 weeks, unfortunately.
Very
and
sad
to say.
And that
is going to be a big, big, big moment in this campaign.
Well, I guess it'll be big if the Democrats can make something of it. If they don't,
John
of course.
Kerry's final chance to get his Iraq position some clarity.
Rob Bignell, final thought from you, just a couple of seconds to go here. Is it too easy to see big GOP momentum coming right off their convention? Should we wait a couple of days and see how it plays out, or do you think it's really swung toward Bush?
No. I think Bush gained from the convention, just as Kerry gained. I think we're actually back to where we were before the Democrats met in Boston. We have a very even match. I think within a week or two, whatever gains Bush had will erode away, just as they did for Kerry.
We'll be watching. Rob, with that, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us from Iowa City, and Chuck Todd in Arlington, Virginia. Thanks to both of you. What a week it's been, all convention, and on we go. In a moment, bloodshed at the hostage standoff at a school in Belsen, Russia. This is On Point. Horrific scene today in Belsen, Russia, as the school hostage drama that came to an end there, with more than 200 dead and 600 wounded, many of them children, Russian commandos stormed a school where separatist rebels had been holding 1,200 hostages for the past 3 days. The rebels had demanded independence for Chechnya. The school's seizure came one day after a suspected Chechen suicide bomber blew himself up outside a Moscow subway station, killing 9 people. And just over a week after 90 people died in 2 plane crashes suspected to have been caused by bombers also linked to Chechnya, Marshall Goldman is associate director of the Davis Center for Russian and Eurasian Studies at Harvard University. He's attending a conference of Russian officials and journalists in the Russian town of Veliky Novgorod between Moscow and St. Petersburg, where everybody is keeping a close watch on events in Belsen. I caught up with him earlier today and asked him to put the bloody school siege in context in the ongoing battle over Chechnya.
It's terribly sad, obviously, and the Russians I've been with, and there are a large number of officials, are also very angry, upset. The problem is that Chechnya has been a part of Russia. It was brought in forcibly into the Russian Empire in the 19th century. Tolstoy wrote a short story about this as Tsarist troops were trying to subdue the Chechens, who were a fierce, primarily mountainous people.
Vladimir Putin came to office largely on the strength of his promise that he would settle this problem. He would crush the insurgency in Chechnya. Has that worked?
Well, obviously it hasn't. Putin keeps saying it has, and that, in a sense, provokes the Chechens. They've been seeking their independence ever since. Partly they're angry because Stalin sent them all to exile. They were then 2 million. Now they're about 1 million. By the way, the million is holding off the whole Russian army at this point. He declared, had an election this past Sunday in which he claimed, or the officials claimed, that 85% of the population turned out. Nobody believed it. The leading candidate got 74% of the vote, which people believe because all the other viable candidates were pushed aside. So the Chechens have been going through a variety of acts to show that this place has not been subdued, that as we say, mission accomplished, you know, that would be the equivalent phrase here, has not been accomplished at all. And so you had the airplanes, you had a subway bombing when I was in Moscow. This took place just after I was using the subway. So it's all pretty scary. And the problem is now that Putin has a real credibility problem. And at the same time, the Russians don't know whether to believe him or not. They don't know whether to believe there are really were Arabs there carrying passports. I mean, you don't kind of advertise this. They just don't know what's happening. And when the airplanes were bombed, initially there was no use of the word terrorist. The television stations were told not to use the word terrorist. And for 2 days at least, they thought, well, maybe they were saying it was not terrorism. It was just faulty fuel or some other problem.
Marshall, what is the Chechens' grievance today? As we talk this evening, what is exactly their grievance?
Well, their grievance is, again, we want to be independent. One, we are still angry about the way Stalin packed us up. And two, the Russians have been absolutely brutal in the way they've treated the people. I mean, they just have kind of raids on any able-bodied male from the age of 15 on up. Is arrested, disappears, sometimes beaten up, sometimes reappears. So from the Chechen point of view, and they've had a series of these things, seizing a hospital, seizing a theater, and they say, the Chechens, in defense of themselves, say, you've done worse to us than we're doing to you, and we just want recognition, and we want to be left alone. The Russians say, and I just had a big argument this evening with a member of the Duma, why don't you just let them go? And he said, if we let them go, then other regions of Russia will go, or the Chechens will try to reclaim them. And besides which, there's nobody to deal with, because one of the problems with the Chechnya now is that it's a group of clans. Nobody's in charge. Nobody can make decisions. And that is, I mean, there is a real element there of difficulty. Who can you negotiate with? So it continues, and it's madness, but it's like a tar baby. They're tarred to it. They can't get out, and they don't have the willingness to say, like General de Gaulle, let's just get out of Algeria. And when I mentioned Algeria, they said, yes, but that was across the sea, whereas Chechnya is still part of us.
In Wisconsin today, on the campaign trail, President Bush said that the slaughter today, the many deaths at the school in Beslan, Russia, were, in his words, another grim reminder, unquote, of the lengths to which terrorists will go. It would also seem to be another grim reminder of the difficulty of solving an issue like this with brute military force.
I would agree. Again, arguing with this, my friend from the Duma, who's a very rational person on other issues. I mean, he represents one of the few people left in the Duma from the Democratic parties. And he says, we just don't have any alternative. And you ask him, what is the cost of continuing to hold on to Chechnya, and what is the benefit that you get from holding on to Chechnya? And he can't answer that question. And it does indeed show that dealing with terrorism this way, and particularly with these people who are prepared to commit suicide, it is difficult. And in the case of the airplane bombings, you know, you're now having widows whose husbands have been killed by the Russians, who say, well, what do I have to lose? Except, it's their life, and they're prepared to sacrifice themselves that way.
Marshall Goldman, thanks for joining us.
Sure. It's terribly sad here, I've got to say, and I hope it works out for those people who are still wounded.
Marshall Goldman is Associate Director of the Davis Center for Russian and Eurasian Studies at Harvard University. He spoke with me from Veliki Novgorod, Russia. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Jane Manners, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Tim Skoog this week. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point.